Portfolio doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the portfolio doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer of solicitation for sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.
You're listening to The Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. Your financial future depends on making sound investment decisions. Make sure you get accurate information and a weekly checkup from a source you can trust, The Portfolio Doctors. Now, live in studio, here's Dan Osgood and Steve Bick, The Portfolio Doctors.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday, everyone. It is The Portfolio Doctors. I'm Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
And a pretty interesting week in the markets, Steve.
Yeah, down every day.
For first week in forever.
2 years.
We've seen that. And it's a little bit, good news is bad news, because it looks like some of the economic reports were actually good news. Unemployment appears to be dropping, whether you want to believe that number or not. A lot of the other numbers were looking pretty promising, that there maybe is some legitimacy to an economic recovery, and yet the market's going down every day.
Forward-looking.
Yeah.
It's already looked past the good news. We've incorporated the good news 2 years ago. Now we're looking forward 2 more years, and it's not looking so good.
It's not looking nearly as good. Got it. Well, it just seems like we've talked about this in the past. As the good news comes out, that puts the panic in everyone saying, oh, great, that means they're going to continue with the taper and all this free money is going to go away. So then what? And that really seems
well, then
to be
what exactly,
this,
yeah.
That really seems to be what this is telling us.
Seems to be, but, you know. I don't know.
Or is this just the beginning of the correction?
Yeah, a proper correction. We had the whole one in January, remember? So
are you going to pronounce this is the start? Or?
No, thanks.
Not while there's still money on the table?
Yeah, exactly. Right. I will say one thing, though, that it is a migration, seems like, into safer things and, you know, other alternative style assets, like, you know, oil seems to be going higher, and you know, the gold keeps going higher, and gold, I mean, that's up. I know the gold stocks are up like 20% this year already, so certainly there's a migration away from some of these high flying names that were driving the indices higher into these alternative investments after being beaten down for so long.
It is actually, that's the one aspect I kind of like about what's happening, is things are finally functioning more normally, where last year we were seeing everything would go up or everything would go down, and things were working opposite of how they normally should, where in typical markets, if the stock market's doing well, typically the bond market is holding steady or dropping slightly. Gold, as the markets are bad, usually gold's doing well and bonds are doing really well, and that wasn't happening over the last couple of years.
No, and you know, even with this week of down, every day down, it sounds bad, but I mean, in all reality, the market wasn't really down that much overall.
The Dow's still over 16,000, I believe, because today wasn't down.
Yeah, it's 16,065.67.
Approximately.
So it's over 16,000. I mean, it's not really taken much of a haircut. It just happened that each day was down. I mean, today, down 40-odd points? And that's nothing.
That's really insignificant when you're looking at a indice that's at 16,000 plus. That 40 points is,
I mean, if you had a share that was trading at $16,000 a share and it lost $43, it wouldn't really make a difference.
Right. Well, with the market, we've talked about this last week. We talked about coupons.com, an IPO on a company that's making
zero. Is that
zero
still
money.
Up double?
I think I saw it go through today, and it wasn't quite as high as it was last week, but it was still substantially higher than it came out.
Wow.
But the one that I'm looking at that's kind of interesting, there was a stock that priced today in the healthcare industry, Castlight Health. It's a company that offers health information via the internet to inform medical choices and reduce insurance costs. Sounds like a good idea.
How many times have we heard that play?
But it sounds like a good idea. And supposedly they say they've helped some of their corporate customers reduce their health costs by more than 10% a year, which for a big corporation, that could be a very substantial amount of money.
Of course, to anyone, yeah.
The IPO, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley were the main lead underwriters on this. They brought the shares out at $16 a share.
1.6, yep.
Which was above the $13 to $15 range they had stated prior. That's not that uncommon, but...
Well, in a hot market, it isn't.
Right. So with that, it gives the company a valuation of $1.4 billion.
Revenues of less than $10 million.
Last year, total revenue, $13 million with an M.
See, I told you. I was right on it, man. Well,
but here comes the better part.
And it's lost $200 million.
No, I don't have any of the deep details.
Okay.
The stock opened today.
35.
Over 40.
Have people lost their minds?
Valuation over $3
billion. On a $10 million in revenues.
13. Come on, don't shortchange them.
This is seriously getting out of control. Why would you buy that other than to dump it immediately?
Yeah, I don't even know how to respond to that.
How much growth do they project? Are they growing at 400% a day?
You would have to catch up because that's now a $3 billion valuation.
On $10 million in revenues.
Come on, 13. You're shortchanging by 30%.
That is just outrageous.
Well, and what we're seeing that is a comparable. So they're saying
a comp.
I think they're trying to connect the dots and say, well, this is what's going to happen. There was another. Looks like Thursday night. Yeah, inspired from other cloud service stocks such as.
It's a cloud play.
Benefit Focus. Which went public at $26.50 a share in September and currently trades at $58 a share off its all-time high of $77 back in January.
Okay, I think I might go on a limb and say the market has peaked. Because this is just, I mean, this really reminds me of 2000 all over again.
Absolutely. It's instead of it saying .com, it's just saying cloud.
.cloud.
And it just seems like here we go. Anything that even vaguely looks
that's
like it could
just
be tied
asinine. Sorry, I mean, can you say asinine on the radio?
I think so.
Okay, I mean,
just as long as you enunciate the entire word.
Yeah, but it's just crazy.
Yes, it's ridiculous. I don't understand at all how that could possibly.
Firstly, why would you buy that IPO? And secondly, how does it double? On what demand? These brokers must just be pumping it down people's throats.
It is. It's that IPO mentality again that was going strong in 2000. Did it get going around 2006 again a little bit? Not to the extent
nothing
that 2000
like this,
was.
Because everyone was buying properties, remember? You didn't have to buy stocks back then. Just buy properties because, geez, that's where you made all your money.
That was going up 100% a year back
then. Whoa. That's just nuts.
And the same thing. I mean, coupons.com last week, same exact story.
So which is your one for next week?
I don't know. I wasn't even aware of this.
I didn't know it either.
Castle Health, or
which is even worse. You would think we would have heard about it,
right? Yeah, $15 stock. You wouldn't think that doesn't get any publicity. Maybe if it's a good company, you just tuck it away, forget about it, and let it go. But
I mean, the only alternative, maybe they only sold 3 shares, so the whole float's 3 shares. That's why there's such demand it doubles.
I think it's probably more than that.
No, I know, but it's just man alive. Okay.
Yeah, it's 107 times revenue.
No, I know.
Pretty good.
But you didn't know what the bottom line was.
Oh, here's actually a great stat. Of the prior 13 deals priced at 100 times revenue or more and sales of at least $10 million, the average 3-year return? Any guesses?
Minus 75%.
Minus 92.
We got to short that.
So you're losing 30%+ a year for the next 3 years.
Well, 92% means you bought it at $10 and you finally sell it at $0.08.
That's good. So there we go. So be cautious when it comes to IPOs. If you get a phone call from someone and they say, oh, we've got this new IPO coming, it's a great opportunity, these are the types of things you need to really look out for. Unless you somehow get in on the IPO price and you were able to buy this at 16, and if you did, I really hope you were able to sell it today.
Well, that's what's termed a hot offering.
Mm-hmm. Which the general public typically is not able to get in on.
No.
Because all the institutions are buying that up, and then they're unloading it to the general public now after it's made that double.
Correct.
So yeah. That's why we're saying
you need to be an insider.
Be careful. If you've gotten a call from someone saying, hey, this is a new hot stock, it's out, it's up 100%, it's just going to keep going, it's maybe already made its move. Just as the proof was right there in that comment over the last number of years, the last 13 deals priced similarly to this were down 92% on average over the next 3 years.
I bet you can't get a piece of that to short, can you?
Probably not
yet. Available.
Generally,
yet.
It takes a few weeks before you can do anything that would allow you to play the downside.
To borrow the stock, yeah.
So you can't even, options don't even come out for a few weeks after the stock. So.
I'll be surprised if they've got to put options out on there. I'll have to keep my eyes open.
They will. So there you go. Well, today we had an interesting lunch with the listener just a couple days ago, and he asked a couple questions that really gave us a topic to talk about today.
Yeah.
And basically he posed a question to us that was, how do I get started?
He's a young guy that he's like, how do I get to retirement when you start from pretty much zero? Well, he's not really starting at zero. He's got a few things in his quiver.
He's got a good job.
He's got his own business.
Self-employed, so it's his own business. And so he's got a lot of opportunities, and there's a lot of avenues you can go down in those situations. But it is, I wouldn't call it a blanket statement, but there are many, many opportunities you can take advantage of that allow you to start laying the foundation for your retirement future. So with that, we just very calmly went through, these are some of the steps you can take, and this is a process. And if you do this, it can make retirement much more of a reality than just heading down the road with no path. So stick around. We will go through that path with you and show you ways that you can head forward a very nice, comfortable retirement. Welcome back. You're listening to The Portfolio Doctors. I'm Dan Osgood.
I'm Steve Bick.
And if you want to reach out to us, we talk about something that is a strong point or something you would like more clarity on, please feel free to reach out to us. You can reach me, Dan, at theportfoliodoctors.com. You can reach Steve, at theportfoliodoctors.com. Or you can just visit our website, theportfoliodoctors.com. You can get added to a mailing list. There's a pop-up there that'll give you the ability to enter your email address. We'll put you on Steve's blog list. You'll see a little more info, just like we're giving here every day on the radio. Also, if you're new listening to the show for the first time and anything we talk about seems interesting to you, definitely we are available on iTunes, the podcast.
I believe so.
And then also from our website, you can go download the podcast.
We have to be good if Apple says we can put
That's
it on
right.
iTunes.
We went through the rigorous
selection
application process. Correct. So we are there. So how does someone get started was posed to us earlier this week, and it gave us a good topic to discuss today, because I have encountered that many times in my side, my financial planning aspect of what I do, and it's a great question, and I understand why it could be very confusing. People think, oh, I'm having a hard time just making ends meet. There's no way I could ever put a penny aside for retirement. And the reality is, baby steps. Everyone's heard that, but how does that apply in looking at retirement?
No, you're right. I mean, you have to start somewhere.
Right.
I mean, as you've said, I mean, you guys in the financial planning world, you constantly harping on, $50 a month, and you start it now and it grows at X amount of dollars. By the time you're 65, grows to some huge number, right?
Right.
And that's cool for if you can be disciplined enough to do that and you can stick it out. What I've seen, I look at it a little bit differently in that I'm not really a financial planner. I'm an investment guy. I basically invest money. Planning, I'll leave that up to you, Jeff. but I look at it a bit differently in the way that I think that the key is really how much do you need when you retire?
Well, that's a big part. That is kind of the starting point for financial planning as well.
Right.
If retirement planning is one of the biggest goals that they're shooting for, which typically it is, if you don't know how much you might spend in retirement, there's no way you can figure out how much you'll need.
No, exactly. And when you do the calculation, you can do it on current dollars today, because we're going to assume, this is a big assumption, massive actually, mm-hmm. that you're going to keep up with inflation. But let's just strip inflation out for just today's conversation, so we don't have to factor in all of that growth, mm-hmm. right? So if you take out inflation, then you're looking at a real rate of return, which means that if you assume inflation is going to be 3 to 5% and you're earning 8, your real rate of return is only 3.
Right.
Okay, because you've taken the 5% of inflation out. Now, for me, I plan on retiring with a relatively lavish lifestyle. I don't plan on becoming a hobbit in a hole in the ground. I plan on flying all over the world and you know, just having a great time visiting places and people and friends and family. So for me, a number in current day dollars, I would need $25,000 a month to retire. Okay. That's what I want. Yeah, it's a huge number. Most people, to them, are like, that's just enormous. And to me, it's a big number.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, if the way that you get back into what you need, therefore, to retire is you multiply that 25 by 12, and what does that get me? $300,000 a year, right? That's what I need.
Okay.
And you're going to draw down, the financial planner says you can draw about 4%, right? Assuming that's...
Right, if you want to use rules of thumb.
Rules of thumb. That's all we're doing now. All I'm trying to show people is how to back into mm-hmm. what your number is.
Right.
So you've got 300,000, divide that by 4%, and it comes to around about $15 million. Okay, that's what I need.
Right.
Okay, 10 to 15. That's about 10, actually, 10 million. Huge number, mm-hmm. okay? Most people, that's just unfathomable. Right. So let's go down.
To most people, and we talk about this all the time, I remember as a kid, $1 million, sound of $1 million, was that's an unbelievable
number. Well, I always thought $1 million was the way to go until mm-hmm. I did this number.
Right.
You know, and the problem is, every year I go, I need the number gets bigger. And so actually what's going to happen with me, I'm never going to retire. I'm just going to work till I drop dead, which is what most people end up doing. But I'm not recommending that. Right. I'm just saying that that's just me, right? So let's just go to the other side of the spectrum. Let's assume you live in Ohio and you can afford to live on $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So you only need 12 grand a year, right? And you divide that by 4%. You've got your nifty calculator there. I'm tired of straining my brain. What does that equal? So $12,000 divided by 4% gets you what?
$300,000.
Yeah, see, that's what I thought. Yep. So you need $300,000 if you're planning on retiring on $1,000 a month.
Right, at retirement.
At retirement. But people don't understand, oh, I only need $1,000 a month. Well, you need $300,000 of asset base, invested asset base,
that's able to produce the 4%.
Yeah, to handle that. Because if you have less, you don't keep up with retirement. You can't handle any draws on that. You can't. It's not going to handle it. So you need, now 90% of America retires on $200,000 or less. Mm-hmm. So everyone's already in a hole. All of those people are now retiring on roughly less than $10,000 a year. Mm-hmm. They don't understand.
$600 or $700 a month.
Yeah, but now of course you get Social Security and a few other things mm-hmm. kicked in and a few handouts. But essentially, you'll be lucky to get $3,000 a month total. And that's, so you get to $300,000. It sounds like a big number. I know people that come to me, well, I'm set. Well, why are you set? Because I'm going to get $800,000 when I retire. Well, do the math. 4% of $800,000, what's that, $32,000 a year? You're retiring on $2,500 a month. Mm-hmm. And you give them that answer. Suddenly, $800,000 is just way too small. They go, I can't retire on that. Well, this is the problem. People don't understand. The only other option you've got is, as you said, Dan, is to work out exactly what day you're going to die.
Right. If you know when you're going to die.
Yeah, you're Nostradamus. Mm-hmm. You can determine the exact day you're going to drop dead.
And exactly how much money you'll need and how much you can spend every day.
And don't factor in if you married your spouse, because, you know, heaven help them if they outlive you by 10 years. Because now what you've done now, then you can start digging into your total principal.
Right.
What we're trying to do here is a calculation where your principal remains intact for that rainy day, or assuming you live longer than you think. Mm-hmm. But if you actually draw down so that ends up on, let's say, the 31st of December, 2036, that's the day I'm going to drop dead. Mm-hmm. Imagine if I do now.
Let me write it down.
Yeah, exactly. But that then is the last day you draw that last dollar out of your bank account.
Right.
So you're left with zero balances.
That's when you've lived perfectly.
Perfectly. All right, but no one can do that. So you want a buffer. And trying to say, that if you're going to be prudent and you're going to get that buffer, you need a minimum of $1 million, and that you're only going to be able to draw 40 grand a year on.
Right. And understand, there are many other factors that go into calculations like this.
Oh, God, this is
as simplistic as
level.
We can make it right now, because there are lots of people that work in California, earn a good wage, save as much as they can, even though it's more challenging probably in California than most other states, but plan on retiring. Like you said, somewhere like Ohio, Iowa, Texas, where the cost of living is substantially less. So on the surface, when you say, oh, gee, I'm spending $3,000 a month here in California, I'll never be able to save enough to do that when I retire. If you move somewhere where the cost of living is substantially less, now all of a sudden you don't need to save as much as you would just because the cost of living is here. Maybe it's $5,000 a month that you spend here in California. You might be able to get away with only spending $2,500 somewhere else.
Okay, and that's fine for some people. But really, I don't feel like having my whole life surrounded by the borders of Ohio.
No,
I'm
just saying.
I mean, that's what you've also got to factor
absolutely.
In.
Absolutely.
Can you really just live with going to the mall in Ohio and back and shoveling snow when it gets? I mean, you know, that's just not for me.
Yeah, there's populations of people that live everywhere. So obviously there's some.
No, without
some
a doubt. I'm not poo-pooing it. I'm just saying it's not for me. I'm just saying that a lot of people, you have to, it's easy to say, but then think where your kid's going to be. Where's your friends going to be?
Right.
Suddenly you're isolated in Idaho, you know, digging up potatoes or whatever you do. And you want, I mean, you're not enjoying your retirement. To me, that's just a non-starter.
Right.
If you're going to go backwards into retirement, in other words, you're going to have a worse quality of life than when you're working, why the heck are you going to retire? You might as well just keep working, seriously.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
So that's the other thing. That date of retirement moves. So that's another variable. I know a lot of people that are, you know, 62 to 65 going, I should be retired now. Well, why should you? Mm-hmm. Well, because that's just because what everyone says you should. No, there's who retires
at 65?
Well, because
that's Social Security kicks in 65, 66,
yeah,
67, and that seems to be like mentally that's a trigger that, oh, as soon as I'm eligible for Social Security, that's when I'm supposed to be retired.
No, I understand what you're saying, but if you retire just because of that, that's foolish.
Oh, right.
In fact, if you do what you love, you've retired already.
Correct.
So one of the main keys, if you want to take away something really good from the show today, is if you're not doing what you love and you can't wait for that 65th birthday to clock around so you can finally throw in the towel, my word, start looking for something else to do right now.
Right. Find something you enjoy and you can be real passionate about.
I'll tell you right now, you get to 65, and I don't know about you, Dan, but I don't know how old really 65 is until I get there. When I'm saying old in terms of how well your body holds up. I mean, we're pretty active guys. We like to go and do stuff. I'm assuming I'll still be able to do a lot of that when I get there. But even if I stop tomorrow and I could do everything I can do today, that still wouldn't be enough to fill my days up.
Right. That's a whole different issue. I have dealt with that many times where people gear up for retirement, get ready, the day comes, and then they're just lost. Like literally a lost soul wandering through the desert trying to figure out what they're doing and where they're going.
Correct.
Because they didn't plan it out and say, well, gee, what am I going to do once I do retire? Retirement's the goal, but then what?
Yeah, but when we come back, we'll tell you at least how to make more money, right?
Right. The steps needed to build towards those numbers once you figure out what that number is.
Right.
Okay, welcome back. It is The Portfolio Doctors. And once again, if you want to reach out to us, something we talk about, you want to learn more about it or add some insight maybe that you've experienced, feel free. Dan at The Portfolio Doctors is the best way to reach me, or Steve at theportfoliodoctors.com. Or you just log on our website. You can join our mailing list, theportfoliodoctors.com. Well, we've covered the first step on how to start getting
So you've got your
retirement
number. It's some massively huge number right now that we've shown you.
Just take one quick step back. We've talked in the past about, you hear about inflation rate, and everyone has their own personal inflation rate because everyone is slightly different. So just saying, oh, the blanket rate of inflation is 3%, that may be different for you as you're listening. You may be doing different things. It may be less, it may be more. We've talked about growth rates and how everyone has their own to accomplish different goals. And it's the same thing with this retirement number. It just depends on how much you think you're going to spend in retirement, how much money you're going to need. If you're going to travel a lot, that could make the number more. If you're going to stay home, you have some hobbies like maybe local fishing where you can just go park at a lake and go fishing, maybe that's not going to spend that much money. Although I enjoy fishing quite a bit, and it's not quite as inexpensive as you would think. So everybody needs to understand that it is your own personal retirement amount where you can't just use that blanket of $1 million and I'm there.
Correct.
In many cases, $1 million will be more than enough, but as we've talked about, it may not, depending on how much money you want to spend and what you want to do.
Look, here's the thing. I mean, really, you don't want to cut this equation too fine.
Correct.
Because the worst possible thing to happen would be you run out of money before you die.
Right.
And so rather err on a bit bigger than too small.
Right. And not just a 1% or 2% margin.
Correct.
Error. You want to give yourself
instead of 300,000, I'm going to have 302,000.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's just, there's no, rather get 400,000. And rather increase, but I mean, the problem with that, of course, then becomes is you keep trying to get to the next hurdle because it's like, oh, if I just work a bit more. But that's why, once again, I said find something you love to do, and then it's not a chore anyway,
right,
at all.
It's not retirement.
No. I mean, some people love what they do, but they just can't because, for example, I know a lot of contractors that love building and stuff, but their body's just given.
So
although,
I do know a tile setter who's 85 or 86 years old that's still is on his knees all day, beating around, putting walls,
amazing, huh?
Putting tile up. It's amazing to watch this guy, but phenomenal condition.
Right.
But so
where do you start? I guess because you got your number. Now it's like, okay, my number is $5 million. I'm worth nothing. How do I get from zero to $5 million before I drop dead?
And part of this would then start going back, what is your risk tolerance? Which that number is going to kind of play into the factor of what your risk tolerance is. If it's a really large number, you don't have anything, you probably need to take more risk now to try to get that money growing quickly.
For sure. And that's really what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think of a triangle and you think of it at the bottom, your safe stuff. So you've got, you know, that's normally where you want to end, right? You want to end with a decent amount of cash and bonds and maybe a house or two at the bottom of your pinnacle, and then maybe some stocks and then maybe a few high risk things, maybe. On the pinnacle. For me, I'm completely upside down because
right.
I'm trying to get to this massive number, so I've got to take on huge amounts
of
risk.
Instead of a triangle sitting on its big base, you've now flipped it over to where it's sitting on the point.
Correct.
And teetering back and forth.
Correct. Now, of course, I have a lot of low-risk investments, but for my personal portfolio, it's invested in certain high-risk stuff or mainly swayed towards the high-risk side just because I need that number to grow.
Right.
And the theory is you accept more risk, it allows you to grow faster. The other problem is you can then also take some major hiccups.
Right.
And so as
with risk comes the higher probability of a loss.
So now the problem is that you're sitting and let's say you're 25, you've got nothing, you start with $25 and by the end of the year you've got $300. You know, you could put all of that on red really at Vegas. It won't have any impact on your life, but if it doubles, hey, 600, maybe try again and you hit red twice and you've got 1,200. Now you've got somewhere, okay? Now that's what I'm talking, high risk, right? Now you've got 1,200, now you've got a little bit of a base. Now maybe you can try and look around and maybe buy a few high-flying stocks or something like that. And that's really how you get the ball rolling. You want that sort of flywheel to start turning. And as the numbers get bigger, then you're going to start portioning off pieces of it into more secure investments so you don't actually give it all back.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. A lot of people think, well, gee, all I could afford is $25 a month. And yes, on the surface, after the first year, $300, like you said, it's probably not going to have an impact one way or the other. But the reality is if you consistently do that, the next year, even with a relatively modest growth rate, the next year, all of a sudden, it starts turning into a more real number, like you were saying. If all of a sudden you have a couple good investments and it turns into $1,000, now you're starting to talk about numbers that could start impacting your life because that has the potential to grow. It opens doors for you to invest in other
Well, I'll give you a basic example. I thought putting aside some money for my son's college when he was born. He's 12 now. Okay, and I didn't put a lot aside. I put $200 a month. Mm-hmm. And it's $35,000 now.
Right.
Now, that's still not going to get close to covering his college, but it just shows you that 12 years later, just $200 a month in relatively conservative investments, it's now $35,000. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a nice start.
And that accelerates because it's growing
sure it
on itself. And yeah. and that's what I was getting at is if you're adding the same amount every year, you're adding it to something that's a growing asset already. And we talk about this all the time, compounding interest
Correct.
And how that is the eighth wonder of the world. If you let money grow on top of itself, it very quickly turns into a large sum of money.
Yeah. Well, not very quickly. It seems
accelerate, right, because if you can get it to double once and then double again, that second doubling all of a sudden becomes a much bigger number.
Now, the interesting part, though, while we're talking about this number getting bigger and bigger, there's a big fallacy out there that you can keep that same growth rate forever.
Correct.
And once you get to larger numbers, once you get to a million, 2 million, you know, you're going to be hard-pressed to keep 8, 10, 12% growth on that going forward because you could, but now you're betting the farm.
Right.
And you're probably going to want to take a lot of that money and push it to one side, earning 3, 4, 5% if you're lucky, and then have that $500,000 left over that's now trying to crank and keep up the mm-hmm. growth. But now you've got a blended rate of return that you'll be really lucky to get 8% on, whereas before you were expecting 10, 12, 15%.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you got to, if, you know, that it, people don't factor that in.
Right.
They just blindly say, oh, I'm going to get 10, 12%. But let me tell you, when you've got $1 million or $2 million sitting there, and it's a lot more difficult to push those chips forward.
It is.
Than when it's the $300 example I just gave you when you put it all on red. Take right. $2 million and put it on red. You know, you're not going to do that unless you're a complete lunatic or unless you're Bill Gates and you've got $30 billion.
But, right.
You know, it's you're not going to do that.
Correct.
Well, most people are.
It is definitely, it is kind of staying with the Vegas concept. Who hasn't been to Vegas, played blackjack, and you win a little bit, and then you win a little bit more, and now you have double what you started with, and you take your initial money that you put on the table and put it in your pocket.
Yeah, and then half an hour later, you're digging money. Into that pocket again to get it back out.
Regularly. But also, the other side is, if you're shooting for that 10 or 12 or 15% return, you're taking a lot of risk to start with.
Yeah.
And that opens up the possibility that like a year like 2008 come through, and now all of a sudden you lose 30 or 40%. Mm-hmm. And when you just talk percentages, yes, that sounds like a big number. But if you're talking about just $1 million and you lose 40%, your million is now only 600,000. And
I
guarantee that plays an enormous
psychological
problem. Just the impact on your ability to retire.
Oh, huge.
Because now you're going to change your focus on, oh, gee, I can't afford to lose anymore. Now you're going to tone it down again because you don't want to lose anymore. And now you're going to do what you should have done before that bad event took
place. Well, actually, hopefully you tone it down. I've seen people go the other way. By golly, I'm going to win this back. Mm-hmm. And the next thing, the remaining 600 is 300.
Right.
Now you're in real trouble.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when you want to try to get back to even in a hurry, that's, you're going to lose fast.
Right. And that's where if you start getting more conservative, as that pot of money grows, you definitely need to be carving pieces off and putting it saying, okay, this is that retirement fund and this is going to be there when I get there.
Right.
And that kind of goes to the mentality of the younger you are, the more risk you should take, the older you get, the less risk you should be taking. And the mentality behind that is, as you're close to retirement, you don't want that money to disappear because you're going
to
need it. You don't have many years left to continue to work to earn that money back if you lose it, where when you're younger, the theory is if you lose, you can always earn it back, which I'm more of a proponent that if you don't lose money, you don't have to earn as much.
No, sure. If you cannot lose, ever lose money. I mean, very few people can ever do that.
It's, I mean, even Warren Buffett, he's lost money plenty of times.
He just buries it under that river of cash flow he gets from his insurance companies. And you know,
everything he owns.
And he can sit it out. But I mean, so all right. So you're putting aside 50 to 100 bucks a month, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to earn, let's say, 6% on that money. So where's your nifty calculator? I'm putting Dan to work here. And we're putting 100 bucks a month aside. We're going to earn 6% return, and we're going to do it for 30 years. What do we end up with?
$100,451.
That's all we get.
That's it.
Okay, now let's earn 10% on that money. What do we get?
$226,000.
Okay, so that helped. 4% right. More makes a big difference.
Yes.
Okay, so now we have to do 200 bucks a month. At back to 6%. Yeah.
In 30 years. $200,900.
Okay, so you tripled it by doubling the amount you put in.
Right.
So there's the compounding coming in. But still, I mean, you're gonna have to do better than that, huh?
Yes.
Because now, remember, you've done 100 bucks a month for 30 years. You've got $300,000. That's just rewarded you with $1,000 a month in retirement.
Right.
So that's why I go back to the fact that you're going to have to increase that risk profile.
Right.
To jetstart this thing. And one of the ways you can do that, or maybe when we can tell people how they can do that when we come back if you want, but... I mean, one of the ways that most people start is to look at the stock market.
Right. That's an easy way to go. Entry point, which can be the best.
It can be, but a lot of people, I think that one of the issues now in the market is people are just blindly throwing money into ETFs where the real money to be made in the stock market is to find that next Microsoft or Tesla or whatever, 3D. You know.
Every year you can pick a handful that just take off and run like crazy.
Yes, but well, you can if you can find them. I mean, in all honesty, and I don't know how long you've been in the game for, but I've been trying to buy and sell stocks for 25 years of my life. I think I'll be lucky if I rewind the clock, I've found maybe 10 or 15 stocks that really, I mean, when we're talking take off, I'm talking you get in at 80 cents and 2 years later you sell at $20, or in one case, bought at $2.50 and sold at $250. So, I mean, these are life changes.
That would help a lot.
Yeah. But to find those, it takes a lot of diligence, a lot of time. But when we come back, I'll lay out a game plan for it to show you how to find these things.
I'll be listening for that.
So I'm going to tell everyone now of 25 years of time and expertise how to invest in the stock market in 5 minutes.
We can do that. Well, welcome back. This is the Portfolio Doctors. That is Steve Bick. He's been investing in the markets for 25 plus years.
Unfortunately, are you really that plus, old? It's now 30 years.
Wow. You're really old.
I am really old.
But let's hear it. I've got my notepad
ready.
Well,
essentially, you know, you get these two schools of thought in investing in the stock market. These are main frame schools of thought, right? Yeah. And I'm just talking about, forget ETFs, forget just diversification. I'm talking particularly, you're investing, you're a stock, you're going to pick a specific stock. Some people look at value. So how cheap is this company in comparison to its peers? Other people look at growth. So, for example, is this company going to grow like gangbusters into the future? Now, the value side of it is less risky because if you're buying a stock, let's say that's worth, let's say $10 million on the market cap is worth $10 million and everyone else is worth $20 million, the chances of you taking a hit in that stock trade are pretty low. Mm-hmm. The problem is a lot of times those companies, you buy it, you find the value, and it just sits and doesn't go anywhere. Because people go, well, they're making some cash flow, but it's really not an enticing business because there's no growth. Now, the growth investors, those are the guys you're seeing buying Tesla and Google and all these things, and they run these things to multiples of 100 times. Well, what was that one you had today?
I'm not sure where that fits on this
but assuming
scale.
That's got to be a growth stock, because if they're buying it at 100 times revenues, they're going to assume that the growth of that company's got to be off the chart, right? So that would be a growth play. And yes, you can; those companies can fire into orbit because people give them these high multiples on income and revenues and things
just
like that.
Just for future potential.
Yeah, because they expect growth to catch up to those that number. Well, when I've found these particular stocks, and as I say, in my life, there's only been a handful of them.
Quickly step back. When I stated that every year there's a handful, I wasn't saying there's a handful that you can identify right at the beginning of the year. This is every year by the end of the year you hear about these top five companies that were up 100, 200, 300, 400%. Last year there were a handful. I mean, Tesla, right. Facebook, 3D,
right.
and some of those.
Yeah. Now, you hear about them, but the key is don't get sucked in on the momentum. I'm caught talking about a company that no one has discovered. And so it's a deep value play, and it has growth potential. I mean, these are diamonds in the rough, and you can search all day long for them, and you can spend years, and you won't find one. And then eventually you might stumble across one. And most of the times whenever I've come across them, I've stumbled across them. As an example, one that I stumbled across was a local company actually called Encore Capital. And it's not a household name. No one really knows about it. But when I came across this business, it was in the middle of a turnaround. Okay, the guy who was turning it around really had his act together. The company was producing $21 million in cash flows, and the total market cap for the stock was $7 million. So in other words, you could have used the company cash flows to acquire the whole company and still have had 60% of your cash flow left in the
just
bank.
Just a full buyback.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't going to do that. That wasn't his way to go. But so I looked at it. This is a complete no-brainer. This thing's deep value. I mean, we're talking deep value. So that was the first thing. So they start tweaking in at 80 cents a share, right? Buying as many as I can. It also had a growth outlook because their market was expanding like crazy into buying up basically written off loans. So they were buying off debt that was written down to zero by the credit card companies. They'd pay them 2 cents on the dollar. Mm-hmm. Those are the guys that call you up and say, hey, pay us 10 cents on the dollar, we'll clean your slate for you, and you do, and there you go, they make 8 cents on the dollar. Great business model, huge upside. And so it had growth, and it was deep value. So I literally, when you find one of these, you need to back the truck up.
Right.
You don't buy 100. Go and, you know, pawn your grandmother's wedding diamond. I mean, seriously, you've got to back the truck up for these plays. Do your research, make sure it's the right one. If you have any questions, give us a call. I'll help you walk through one, because let me tell you, if you found one, I'll be as interested in this thing as you are. But I'm just saying, when you find it, back up the truck. So that's what I did. I backed up the truck and loaded up on these things. And eventually, well, not even eventually, about a month or two later, it started moving. And 18 months later, it had gone from 80 cents a share to $18, which was, I thought it could get to around 10. So it blew 80% past my initial target. I hung on the whole way up. From 80 cents to $18, what's that, 1,500% return or something. And I had enough shares to make a significant difference, where I'd acquired, because I couldn't get that many, I didn't have that much cash back then, but for $40,000, I got 50,000 shares. Well, 50,000 shares at $18 was almost $1 million. Those are game changers.
Absolutely.
That suddenly you're in a different league in terms of retirement. You're a different league in terms of now what should I buy next. You're able to maybe diversify a little bit. Mm-hmm. And those are the types of things, if you're really wondering about, hey, how can I get from A to Z? That's one way.
Right.
It's not an easy way, and you're not going to find it all. But what you can do is you can start preparing yourself mentally and start honing your skills with this art and science of how to find these businesses, and you start thinking about what to look for. So when that does show up, you are ready to take that. Because how many people, Dan, you gave me three examples today of people you knew who you've brought these kinds of deals to, and they go, oh, no thanks.
Right. Or is it just that hesitation? Like you're talking about, be prepared when something like this occurs.
But the key is, it's not your next door neighbor coming to you and say, hey, are you going to get into Twitter stock because it's a hot IPO? Right. That's not the deal. The deal is something like I've just explained, where no one even to this day, well, few people probably know who Encore Capital is, but most people don't. Mm-hmm. It's not a household name.
Obscure names.
Back then, it was completely obscure. No one even knew who the heck they were, what they did. I didn't even know. The only reason I came across the stock was because I was doing turnarounds and I was introduced to him and I asked him what he did and he gave me a balance sheet and I looked at it and went, holy smokes. Mm-hmm. I would never have found it in a screen.
Right. And that's where there are some challenges. There's
a lot of challenges. I'm not saying that's easy. I'm just showing you a way.
Right. Yeah. We are by no means saying, well, just go look at every penny.
I've been doing
penny
it 30 years,
I
found 10.
Yeah. Well, another way that I've seen that you can make a pretty good case is stocks tend to trade together a lot. So if you find a sector where maybe there's a company that's struggling, it kind of drags down the entire sector. Mm-hmm. So every company in that area gets just beat up and run down.
Right.
Where there's many cases where maybe 90% of those other companies are doing phenomenal business. And you can go and look and say, well, gee, these are all down just because they're affiliated with this particular company in this industry. That gives you some opportunities
to
invest in those and let them just come back naturally, because the facts are they are making a lot of money.
Yeah, I agree. Those are ways. And those are like your normal 20 to 50% return guys when you hit
normal.
Them. Yeah. I mean, there's excellent rates of return, but what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get someone from $1,000 to $200,000 fast.
Right.
And as I say, you're not going to find them. I mean, you can go and search all day today, and you know, I do all day every day trying to find it. Yeah. And you might find the funny part is you might find it instantly.
Yeah.
The problem is you won't be prepared enough to realize that it's the one to buy. Right. So that's where all the training comes in.
Well. Once again, you've been listening to the Portfolio Doctors. Thanks for listening. Happy Friday, everyone out there. Have a great weekend. Looks like it should be nice. As always, here around San Diego, be safe. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to the Portfolio Doctors on ESPN 1700. To schedule a financial health check, go to theportfoliodoctors.com. Or to speak with Dan Osgood, Steve Bick, or any guests on this program, call 858-764-7250. That's 858-764-7250, or go online at theportfoliodoctors.com. That's theportfoliodoctors.com. The Portfolio Doctors are Dan Osgood and Stephen Bick, who are investment advisor representatives of their respective registered investment advisor firms, ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management Company LLC. The opinions expressed by the Portfolio Doctors and guests on this radio show are their own and do not reflect the opinions of this radio station. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only. Moreover, no listener should assume that any discussions or information presented serves as the recipient of or a substitute for personalized advice from ACAS LLC, Cottingham Management LLC, or from any other investment professional and is not intended as an offer of solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. ACAS LLC and Cottingham Management LLC are not law or accounting firms, and no portion of this presentation should be interpreted as legal, accounting, or tax advice. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any listener. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation.